Welcome, everybody. Hope you are well on a reasonably grey Thursday morning. This is Bordier Live, Bordier UK's Q1 2017 investment update. I'm David Muncaster. I'm head of sales and marketing for Bordier in the UK. I'm joined today by Mark Robinson, our chief investment officer, and by Ian Heap, head of our platform management service. We're going to dive straight in. Got a lot to get through. Thanks, everybody, for questions that you've contributed so far. And if there are any outstanding questions from individuals, please drop me a line afterwards and we'll deal with those individually for you. So we're going to start off on terms of positioning and outlook. This is a very interesting question that came in. Is this the end of the bull market, Mark?
Okay, morning, everyone. I don't think it's necessarily the end of the bull market, but there certainly are some amber signals out there flashing that we probably shouldn't ignore. We have to remember that this is a bull market wave that's been running since 2009, since the end of the financial crisis, since when we've had massive amounts of monetary stimulus, and whether or not this is drawing to a close, difficult to tell, but certainly starting to lose some efficacy as far as we can see. Of course, it's not just a bull market in equity markets, it's a bull market in bond markets too. We've got record multi-year low bond yields, and we've got this role reversal really, when traditionally lower risk assets have performed just as well, if not better, than higher risk ones. When you look at equity market valuations, they certainly are stretched. You've got things like the S&P 500 trading on a multiple of about 18 times forward earnings. That's way higher than the five-year average. It's way higher than the 10-year average. And when you cyclically adjust the earnings of companies in the States, you're looking at about 30 times. That's only twice been seen in history, once around the time of the Great Depression in the late 1920s, and the second one at the end of the TMT boom. So valuations are stretched, and it's something that is of some concern. I think the other thing is complacency is running very high in markets, and if you look at the ratio of bulls to bears, even at an institutional level, they're running at a very strange levels indeed. And then you look at anxiety in markets, things like the VIX index, which measures anxiety. That's an extremely low level, and certainly at levels seen just before the financial crisis. So, as I say, a lot of amber signals and things that we probably shouldn't ignore.
Well, what I would add to that as well, is bull markets tend not to die of old age. They typically die of fright. So what they're most afraid of is a recession. So at the moment, do we see a recession on the horizon? Are we predicting an end to this bull market? No. We do feel that stock markets are, however, long overdue a correction. So we are mindful of that.
So a key question, and some of you will be familiar with this, how is that backdrop affecting our strategic asset allocation and current position? What have we done most recently?
Well, as many of you know who support our strategies both online and directly, that we have been reducing our positions, our equity positions, for quite some time now. So going back to 2016, January, for a balanced investor, we would have 60% in equity market exposure. Q2 2016, we started to take our foot off the gas, if you will, and go to a more neutral position. And pre-Trump, we took another 10% out of a typical balanced portfolio, so a swing of 60 to 40% in equity market exposure. And that's also worked around positioning about index linked, fixed interest exposure, and also how we've dealt with cash within the portfolio, because cash is an asset class in our minds. It's not just sat there because we don't know what to do with it. It's very much part of our thinking. So overall, we have moved to the bottom end of our strategic weights for equity market exposure. But I would flag in our defensive strategy, where we can go between 0 and 20%, we remain 5% exposed to equity markets, typically domestic, because we still feel there is value add for a lower-risk client to have a foot in those markets. But overall, it's very much focused on repositioning around equities and other concerns, such as commercial property. So pre-Brexit and post-Brexit, stresses within that sector. Many funds were gating, which simply means that if you held that fund, you wouldn't be able to sell it. So prior to a lot of those funds gating, we chose to step away from that sector and reduce our commercial property exposure. Now, in many instances, if you wind back the clock maybe 18 months, we had up to 20% in commercial property. We now have zero, given our concerns about the sector. And I think if you were reading the press on the way in today, you'd be seeing that jobs of 10,000 plus are expected to move away from the financial sector again as a knee-jerk reaction to Brexit. So it's something that's very mindful. We're not overly concerned about commercial property over the longer term, but just right now it's not as favourable.
I think most of the people we have on these calls have clients who are live with us. Some I know who have joined the call are just in early conversations with us. But from a Bordier perspective, Mark, why for a private client is it still right to be so defensively positioned?
Well, I think there's still a large number of issues and event risks that out there. I've mentioned things like valuation and complacency, but you know, we've got economic growth, which is really not particularly booming. It's barely 2% in most developed economies. You've also got the prospect of the monetary policy cycle changing. That will bring stresses on consumers. It will bring stresses on businesses as rates begin to rise. And we're already seeing that. I mean, in the high street, for example, you've seen a number of companies announcing recently or putting statements out that they're finding cost conditions very tough, inflationary pressures rising, the likes of Next. I mean, Next share price is halved in the last 8-9 months. You know, these are companies that are really suffering, and this is right at the heart of the consumer sector. You know, we've had some recent weak data on GDP, both in the UK and the States. And some of the backbone of growth in the UK, for example, the services sector is starting to contract somewhat. So economic activity is looking quite modest and certainly not necessarily supportive of a real sort of bull market as we've discussed. I think there's a lot of hope and expectation placed on the Trump reflation trade doesn't really seem to be coming through, and a number of policies clearly falling by the wayside or being delayed, like tax reform. So I think investors may increasingly start to lose patience with that that Trump trade. And of course, we've got a lot of event risk in Europe, not just surrounding Brexit or European elections. We've got some specific event risks surrounding things like Italian banks, Greek debt. And then we've got geopolitical risk to think about. So a lot of uncertainty, and I think right to be defensively positioned at this moment.
And the risk of sort of sounding like a broken record, because this is a question that's actually come up in the last three conference calls that we've done. What, in your view, would make us move from our defensive stance in terms of equity markets to a more, say, neutral stance? When would we put risk back on the table? I think this is a question that advisors are being asked by their clients.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. Certainly a sharp correction in equity markets, or indeed bond markets, might cause us to reassess things. It really depends on what the trigger is. And I mean, if earnings, corporate earnings are holding up quite well, and some of the other event risks have diminished, then we might find us adding more risk and going back maybe to a more neutral position on things like equity. But with, as with all investment decisions, you've got to look at the evidence, you've got to look at see what's changed, if anything has changed, and then reappraise. It's going to be difficult, and removal of some of these event risks with no upward adjustment in markets might also consider us, cause us to reconsider positioning. Got to remember fundamentally that you know, we've been selling quite high, we've been buying quite low, and I think a lot of people, investors, even market professionals tend to forget this, and we don't want to put risk back on at the wrong moment, just when actually it's the moment when everyone should be de-risking. We think we're ahead of the game. A lot of people out there probably still sitting on their hands having done nothing.
Okay. I'm going to put you both on the spot a little bit more. A lot of advisors that we interact with would have made very good gains in passive investments to date. What would you say to those advisors?
Well, I think, first of all, well done. And I know many investors and both advisors and private clients have seen large rises based on ETFs, which, again, are nicely cost-efficient. But we would say, mind your eye. Certainly, at the moment, with markets the way they are, second longest bull run in history, things are looking relatively toppy given the amount of tripwires that we can see out there. But many of the investments you're seeing, whether a tracker based on the FTSE or S&P 500, you are buying the basket of the entire index. And it's that full replication that right now gives us great cause for concern. So be very mindful about what they're tracking. Certainly within many of the sectors, we're seeing valuations at peaks. In many instances, 60 times higher than long-term averages, which again is something that we focused on an investment committee over the last 6 to 9 months, which goes back to why we were de-risking last year based around valuation points. So have a look at what Tracker is actually trying to do. Make sure that you're mindful of economic changes as we are, because a tracker will simply track the market down. So if you were a betting person, which with investments you have to have that kind of logic in mind, where do we think the best place to be right now? Is it tracking the market on a one-for-one basis in a passive sense, or do we think that an active manager overlay is more prudent given the backdrop of the market?
So it's partly answered the next question, which is, why haven't we used passive investments or instruments within portfolios, and would we consider using them now?
Well, I think we're just very mindful of some of the some of the things that Ian's just spoken about. The biases in some of the indices, for example. Just take things like the FTSE 100 index. Five stocks make up a third of your investment. The 250 index, you're exposed to two sectors only: financials and industrials. You take a broad European index, you're going to have about 70% of your money invested in France and Germany only. And there's lots more companies, there's a lot more countries out there to invest in. And the S&P 500, it's been an index that's been very difficult to beat, largely because of the exposure to just a handful of stocks. Apple, for example, is 18 times the average weight of the average stock weight. That's massive. And the next biggest stock, Microsoft, is 13 times the average market weight. So you've got these huge biases in the indices. We would rather take an active approach. We want the underlying managers that we use to take an active approach. And if they don't like something, we don't want them to own it. It's as simple as that. And passives do have a place. I think it's important to say passives do have a place. And just going back to the argument of if we would put money back into the market, we might use a passive instrument just to get immediate market exposure, but it's not, in our view, a long-term position. We prefer the active approach.
What we would also say is that passives do play a role still now within our asset allocation. So with our wealth management strategies for clients that come direct, we do use an exchange-traded fund or an ETC in this instance to get exposure to gold. So we have a 6% weighting to gold. And we feel the best way to do that right now, most cost-effective, is through a tracker that has physical backing. It's got 71 metric tons of gold sat behind that. So we think it's a good, simple, clean, straightforward way of getting exposure to gold. When we look on our platform solutions, though, so with my platform hat on, we don't use ETFs within that service, because what we can't control is the brokerage impact when we're doing trading. We have to be mindful that on a managed service where we trade on a minimum quarterly basis, we wouldn't want that brokerage impact to start to build up and erode performance. So if we had lots of ETFs within those solutions, there wouldn't be an issue. But certainly, many trackers do have uses, and I'm sure that we'll use them again. If we wind the clock back just 2 or 3 years, we were getting exposure to index-linked markets in the UK through a tracker. So They do play a role, they continue to play a role, but right now it's active, is our view.
Yeah, just one final thing on that is that, you know, 2015 was a very straightforward year in which to beat passive strategies and a number of active funds not only beat the market, but they beat the market by a country mile in some cases. 2016 was a much more difficult year, largely because of the role that multinational companies, which are dominant in these indices, played, particularly as the oil price rallied, and currency weakness, particularly sterling, flattered those multinationals. But 2017 so far, the first couple of months, probably passive strategies had the upper hand, but the most recent evidence is that active is really started to come through quite strongly. We just did a survey of our UK funds the other day. This is sort of year to date, to last week. We use 11 active UK funds across our strategies, our income strategies and growth strategies. 11 funds, 10 of those had outperformed the UK market, and the one that didn't was only 0.3% behind. So already active starting to outperform passive.
Okay, thanks. I'm going to sort of move us on a little bit, conscious of time. Anyone has sort of any additional requirements for clients around use of passive investments, then just drop me a line and we can respond something specific to you, particularly if it relates to platform business. One of the other big differentiators that clients and advisors see within Bordier portfolios is exposure to alternatives and that asset class. I'm going to ask two questions in one here. First of all, what do we mean by alternatives? I think often it is a statement that's used and interpreted differently across different managers. So what do we mean by alternatives? And why have we got such significant weightings to alternatives?
Well, if I pick up on the actual weighting to alternatives, we've now got to a position where in our lower risk mandates, in our defensive strategy, we have a little over a third of the portfolio in alternatives. Now, alternatives, absolute return funds, all-weather funds, basically an investment that's not tracking or not guided by equity markets. It's looking to make an absolute return come what may. So in many instances, some of these investments are a cash plus style investment, and by that I mean, what would you get on cash? Can we get a little bit more than that, net of fees, cost, charges? And then other more of the exotic end of the scale, where they're trying to make larger returns, and that is more linked to maybe leveraged investments around equity markets, where they're doing long short trading. So when I use the term exotic, I don't mean that it's something that will be complex in nature, because all the investments that we buy, it's very much a case that you have to understand what's going on under the tin. There are no black boxes. There's no confusion about what they're trying to do, because they're the kind of investments that have generally gone wrong over the years. And we've seen situations where, as mentioned, Bernie Madoff, where he was promising long-term returns of plus 14%, but wouldn't tell you how that was achieved. So you can see it's best to avoid such investments in those areas. So we've added to alternatives over the last 2 years, and it's something that we've done, certainly within our investment committee. We've used these investments for quite some time, and I think the use of alternatives in some institutions has been quite faddish of late because of the fact that equities are so high and people have chosen to look elsewhere. With our skill set and our research team, we're very au fait with the alternative investment managers out there. We have great relationships with them, and we have a deep understanding of what they're trying to achieve.
Mark, why should advisors and clients be confident in our approach in this area?
Well, I think we've been doing it a long time. Our aspirations are, you know, we're not looking for funds that have very, very high aspirations. We're talking about very modest return objectives, and it's our blending of these vehicles that we think actually works extremely well. It's all about reducing portfolio risk, looking at the underlying risk of each investment, but also looking at how they blend together. You know, we incorporate gold, actually. You just mentioned about gold. That is one of our alternatives. We regard that as an insurance policy, not as a commodity. It is a commodity, clearly, but we think of it more as an insurance policy or a safe haven asset. And, yeah, this is the blending, as I say, of these assets that we think can get you through some of the more tougher times in markets. We haven't had tough times in equity markets or bond markets for some considerable time. That time will undoubtedly come, and having a backbone of certainly your defensive or your cautious portfolios in alternative asset classes, we think actually will carry you through.
Okay. That does lead on quite nicely to another very relevant topic that most advisors or most intermediaries we work with will face with clients every day. How we manage income, de-accumulation. So what do we think of specialist de-accumulation products that are coming to the market? I suppose more importantly, how does that differ in terms of how Bordier handle de-accumulation?
If I take that one, David, I think many of these de-accumulation or drawdown or target retirement funds, a lot of these solutions are pushed out there really for retirement cases, where many instances there are no silver bullets. You have to be very mindful that there is no one size fits all. So we're aware of these funds that have come to market, some of them in the last 2 years, some of them perhaps the last 5 years, where I think in a rising market you can achieve returns which are maybe in line with target, maybe a little bit ahead, but what we have to be mindful of is what is the next phase of markets and how will these funds start to perform. So when we're dealing with a pension client who's maybe in drawdown or looking to start drawdown, it's a very key time to understand exactly what they're looking to achieve, what risk tolerances that client has, the client's circumstances, and then also apply the market backdrop to that. Because if a client is looking to maybe have a large single-digit yield from that portfolio, steering the underlying asset allocation to target such a high yield is not healthy for the client in the medium term or certainly long term, because there will be issues where you're looking for investments in a low yield environment, which is just really not going to be good for the long term protection of capital value. So understanding the client's need is something that we put at the forefront of what we do, and then we look for a total return mentality for the investment. So 5% drawdown, we wouldn't be achieving that by 5% yield, because again, we think that would put the portfolio under too much duress. If you had half from capital return and half from yield, that is a far more sensible place to be. And any new client that came on board, what we would normally do is say, well, what is your yield requirement? What is your drawdown requirement for the first 12, 18 months? We would typically put that to one side. Then that is assured, and we can build the portfolio around that surety.
So we have to work hand in glove with advisors and the client's individual requirements.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not already obvious. You know, the risk-reward tables have been somewhat turned on their head. You know, we've got record low bond yields. You know, the 10-year gilt yield in the UK, you know, 1.15%. If investors are seeking an income yield of 4 or 5%, it's just not really possible without taking excess risk.
And what about for low-risk clients in this environment, Mark?
Yeah, I think they have to look at capital return options in combination with income to generate returns. You know, historically, investors, low-risk investors, have gone into fixed interest as sort of their bread and butter for income provision. But that may not necessarily be the safest place to allocate capital. Actually having money in more growth-orientated investments, not necessarily high risk, I mean, it could be even absolute return funds. Funds generating or trying to generate LIBOR plus 2-3%, that's perfectly satisfactory sort of contribution to total returns. And so taking a more pragmatic approach to provision of income is what it's all about, and that's what we're trying to do.
Is there any difference in approach in relation to income generation through the platform propositions from your side of things, Ian?
Well, on platform itself, so the platform managed portfolio service, we offer growth solutions, our standard growth solutions there, so 1-5, defensive, cautious, balanced growth, and adventurous. They do produce a yield. You can draw that yield on a monthly, quarterly, biannual basis, depending on the platform that you're using with that client relationship. In terms of a direct income solution, so growth and income, you would need to come to us directly and use our Bordier Managed Portfolio Service, and that can then have a slightly higher yield. Typically, at the moment, though, we're only seeing about 1% difference between the growth and income solutions.
So the answer is you had clients who had income requirements or looking at deaccumulation, talk to us, let us work with you to work out the most optimal solution for achieving that over the short, medium and long term. This is a question that came out in the meeting that we had very recently, back in the sort of under the positioning and outlook. We talked about lots of the risks and unknown, and as one drops away, another one seems to replace that. What if markets, I mean equity markets in particular, what if they go nowhere for the next 6 months?
I think that's perfectly possible that it will go nowhere. There'll be underlying drivers of creating a situation where markets go sideways, and what it might be is some of the things that have done extremely well, like these multinationals starting to lag a bit, and other less dominant stocks in indices are doing better, but the net effect of that being a market that appears to be going sideways. But for active managers, actually, that's a great environment in which to invest. I mean, there's always going to be opportunities for active managers out there, and I think taking a combination of active asset allocation and active management by the underlying instruments that you use, I think you can still make a return in a market that's going sideways.
Okay, thanks, Mark. Moving on to a little bit of a summary, really. I know we've got a couple of more minutes left, but what's the most common messages that you're giving to clients and advisors right now?
Well, I think the message that we're giving is that we're cautious, but we're not running for the hills. And it's very much a conversation we're having with advisors who are coming to us saying, well, we're also seeing that caution from our clients. So you've already made the move that our clients were considering, which is excellent because it means that our investment committee thought process and the asset allocation changes we've made are in line with clients. We're not seeing many clients coming to us and changing their risk profile, if we put it that way. We are looking forward, as we always do, 6, 12, 18 months, and saying, well, where are the opportunities coming? Global emerging markets, we have no exposure there. Commercial property, we've touched on. There are opportunities to look at those sectors again and to add back. But right now, I think the key messages we're giving is that the largest cash weight we have in our defensive strategy is 5%. It's not that we don't know how to invest. We are fully invested. If you take the 5% or below is full investment, all the way to our adventurous clients who maybe have up to 1% in cash, 2% if you're on platform. So we're seeing opportunities. We are kicking the tires of all our investments as we do during our micro investment committee meetings. I'm very much focused on, can we get a return from each investment? Everything doesn't go up in a straight line, but as long as we're doing a cash plus star return, because cash is not king at the moment in terms of returns, but it is there for a defensive call. So some of our near cash investments that we can quickly sell, typically trade on a Monday and reinvest on a Tuesday or Wednesday, they are the ones that we will call on first to take advantage of any correction in markets. And by correction, probably 10-15%. But again, that depends on what is behind that correction. One of the advisors that we work with said, well, what happens if Trump was taken out? And I took that quite literally, and meant if he was assassinated. And that would immediately cause issues in the markets. But then longer term, there could be opportunities. So his first 100 days in office, he would say that they're a success. Others would say, well, what has he really done? Apart from a bit of saber rattling towards North Korea. The wall hasn't been built. Nor has he reinvigorated the coal industry, which is questionable anyway. So we remain invested, and we remain mindful that there will be opportunities probably this year to make further changes.
Yeah, just add one thing to that, and that is, you know, just because we have introduced more caution in terms of reducing equity market risk, you know, the asset classes that we've gone into are also making a decent return. Index-linked bonds being a good example, you know, we've outweighted there. That exposure, and that's actually been very good contribution to return. So, it's not as though we're missing out.
And Mark, any final messages that you're giving to clients at the moment?
Well, I think it's not about chasing every last bit of return in this sort of market. It's about wealth preservation, positioning for the possibility of tougher markets ahead, and that's certainly what we're doing. And most clients, most advisors that we're talking to, you know, are pretty aligned with that view, I think.
hearing when I'm out and about. That's the end of the call, almost. A couple of things I noted down. I think, as Ian made reference to, for those firms, advisors who are looking for an investment partner that reflects not only their own concerns about where returns are going to come from, or indeed with the valuations in markets, and importantly where the clients have that view as well. You know, we're a strong partner for them. We're also fulfilling, I think, what is one of the key roles of a DFM, which is we're making investment decisions. We're not having to move clients in and out of risk profiles. They're being managed appropriately up and down the risk spectrum, but within their risk profile. And that's ultimately, I think, where most advisors and firms look to outsource to a discretionary manager. So, you know, be very happy to talk in more detail, answer any other specific questions that we've not covered off today. There's also be a recording of this available to you very shortly, and CPD certificates to follow. So thank you all for listening. As I said, please forward any questions directly to me if you have anything that wasn't answered. Of course, thank you for your continued support. And you will be receiving, I imagine, in the next 24 to 48 hours, our full Q1 investment performance pack, which includes a summary of our latest investment committee thinking. It leaves me with nothing else to say. Thank you, Ian. Thank you, Mark, for your time. And have a good Thursday, everybody.
Thanks, everyone, for joining. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this recording of the Bordier Live Q1 2017 Investment Update Call, which took place on Thursday, the 4th of May 2017. We would ask you to spend a moment of your time to listen to the following regulatory wording. This recording is issued and approved by Bordier & Cie UK PLC, which is a company incorporated in England. Registered address 23 King Street, St James's, London, SW1Y6QY. Bordier & Cie UK PLC is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. This recording is not intended as an offer to acquire or dispose of any security or interest in any security. Whilst every effort has been made to ensure that the information contained in this recording is correct, the directors of Bordier & Cie UK PLC can take no responsibility for any action taken or not taken as a result of the matters discussed.